I'm Norwegian, and my name comes from Austria. So that's why. So in Norwegian, I was Christopher Fischt, and then I moved to Germany. Feminist as I am, I also took the name of my wife, and her name was Weber. So now my name is in Dutch Christopher Weber Fürst, and in English it's Christopher Weber Fürst.
But you are a famous author too, because I've seen that book title everywhere. I don't know, because I'm very into the issue. And then that's how you see the titles of the books that are in the field, because you've written about the feminine future called The Future is Female. Yeah.
And which is also for some people provocative. And I think without being a little bit provocative, nothing will happen.
Exactly.
And so the title of the book is The Future is Female, The Art of New Living, because if we allow people, if we allow women to have the same equity opportunities as men, this is what the world needs, actually. My father was not taking very good of my mother in those days. Already then, as a little boy, I felt there was something wrong. But of course, in those days, I didn't fathom what it was until I was much older. It's really been my life purpose. And this might, from a grown-up, middle-aged man like myself, to say this might sound a little bit provocative, how we identify ourselves psychologically. I am more feminine than most women. I think it's relevant because ever since, it was 7 years after the end of the Second World War. And I grew up in this very traditional home in Norway where the man had this place and the woman had this her place. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of things have changed incredibly since then. I guess it, like I said before, it was always a deep inner knowing that women were treated so unfairly in our society, even in Norway. So I also in my experience I've seen it so many times. And when I talk about my experience, since my mom wanted me to be a doctor, of course I said yes, mom. So I started to study medicine in Canada for a year, which was a beautiful place. But I didn't want to become a doctor. I wanted to become a farmer. So I went back to Norway and I bought a farm because I wanted to create kind of a mini world on my farm, because I wanted to have 5 kids on my own, and I wanted to have 5 kids from all over the world and prove to the outside world we can live together in peace and we can create something great. Unfortunately, I married the wrong wife. But I had this farm, you know, with pigs and horses and cows and everything for 22 years, and it was a really great experience to be so connected to the nature, because doing that, and I know that from later on, from a very famous Brazilian scientist. He said that people who have been farmers have a very deep understanding of systemic thinking.
Because
you have to be so connected to nature, you know, like when are you going out in the field to sow and plow, and when are the pigs supposed to breed, and the cows and calves and all the seasons. So I married the wrong wife, so I got divorced and I sold the farm, and then I started to study pedagogy, which is like teaching. I wanted to work with kids. But at that age, I was not so young anymore. So I had a very good friend, and he said, "Christopher, you know, you can't go on doing like this, because, you know, you will never earn enough money to live the life that you want." So I said, "You know, why don't you come to me and become leader of my training department?" And I said, "Well, yeah, well, which, you know, training grown-ups or kids is very much the same, actually." So I did that for more than 10 years. So I was an executive in IT and telecom, teaching or selling training for computer
IT business.
Skills.
All right.
Yeah. And then, you know, this was the dot-com period. Everybody wanted to invest and become rich. And in a very male-dominated environment, and I said, "No, this is not for me."
Yeah,
these ego guys only wanted to be rich on behalf of all the people working there. Mm. So I said, okay, 2003, I said, I want to become a coach. So that's when I started my first coach education.
That's impressive because you went the total experienced way that you felt something and then you reacted very constructively to that. Like some people, they just take what they're getting, like, you know, they're being told what to become or what to focus on. And what you did was actually self-experiencing before you knew the wisdom that this is not going to happen for me, you know. And that's what you said in the previous, when I met you last time, that you are very feminine. And I think that quality, is a lot of, even a lot of females don't have it enough. And we need to find that again. And what you did was experiencing nature to gain that, right?
Everything that I've done since 2003, I've been coaching women all over the world.
Yeah.
On every continent and very different cultures, like in Africa, South Africa, mm-hmm. India, China, in the US, in South America, and all over Europe. And it's basically the same thing. Like Simone de Beauvoir, which is I love her work, where she says, you're not born a woman, you become one, which we know, since I also studied neuroscience as part of my coach training. And in neuroscience, we're saying, and this is, I think is incredibly interesting, we are architects of our own experience. So everything we know about ourselves, our self-image, our ego, everything is just a mental construct. Mm-hmm. And also other research is showing that we have been taught men are from Mars and women from Venus, Venus or was the other way around, I'm not, but that's not true.
No.
The truth is that we are much more alike than we're different. Exactly. But we have been taught this narrative, which we have made part of our own history. So we think we are so different, which makes this divert between us, which is absolutely not necessary, which is creating, which is creating a lot of conflict. And I think this is the most important issue in this entire world to solve the problems that we are facing in annihilating humankind, you know, because if we go on like this, the future outlook is not very good. Although I have changed my perspective more in the direction of we as men has to take care of that this process run according to what it's supposed to be. The diversity, inclusion and equity has become a red herring. It has become a woke word. And if you look at in the States, you know, many states are forbidding to talk about it. Many universities are not having it on the curriculum anymore. Many companies are shutting down, like Tesla, like Meta, like Zoom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They have stopped their diversity programs.
Really?
Because it's uncomfortable to talk about, so they don't do it anymore. So that's why
they call it the woke thing, or
I talk about equity because equity is not the same as equality. Equity is like we are all the same from a democratic perspective. And particularly what I've been working with, career coaching for women and talent management programs for women all over the world, it's not democratic.
Yeah.
It is very hierarchical. It's very top-down. And this is definitely not part of human nature. And I have posted on LinkedIn and Facebook like a couple of weeks ago, what would happen if men start earning less than women for doing the same job. And nobody except for women answer it. Why is that women do all these things as we men do, but they get lesser paid? Why are there? There's a Norwegian female conductor, you know, conducting orchestras. And she had this talk where she said, why are there so few men, female conductors? Yeah, why? Are women less love of music than men? And then one misinterpreted and said, Because a conductor can also be somebody who runs a train, yeah? So
oh, yeah.
why are there so few female conductors running trains?
Yeah.
And so on and so forth.
Yes. So yeah. Not only are there fewer women doing the male traditional work, but it's like when you ask that to a man, why is it so few men in this and this field? They're getting confused because they're not used to this situation.
Exactly.
And then also, like, if you turn the question upside down of all fields in the world, even technology, even implementations of visions, everything, if they became female, people will feel very discriminated all of a sudden. Because then it's like, the way it's now, it's very masculine, right? So
I call it very patriarchal. It's a way of organizing society for the last 6,000 years, where men had the power, and they were using it as a tool of creating wealth for themselves, creating power. And this is just a fact. A lot of people won't like it, and they won't see it because it feels like a threat to them, to the masculinity. But the result of the of the patriarchal organization of society is that we have a lot of toxic masculinity. I'm not criticizing men, because I've been one of those guys myself until I started understanding, wow, this is not the man that I wanted to be. But this is how men are being raised. This is what we learn about ourselves. What we need to understand is that what we need is a synergy between the feminine and the masculine, because what it is now is like it is a discrepancy, and we're kind of fighting towards each other, which is very sad, and I don't want that. I want to bring the best out in the female and the best out in the
male
in the male, and we can do that by understanding what are the basic needs of human nature. This is what is not happening in organization, because there's a logic of profitability. It's called the profitability paradox. The organizations focusing on earning most money earn much less money than the one focusing on serving the people. Started with Calvinism in 1512, when John Calvin, the German priest who was the founder of capitalism, the main focus of people should be to serve God. And to serve God meant you only have to do whatever you felt in that moment was the right thing to do, but you would never know if it was the right thing before you were supposed to enter the purgatory. You know, are you going to heaven or hell? But you didn't know, so we have to do everything right. And the right thing to do was to serve God, and particularly in those days, to serve God meant nobility. The ones who were in power had the money. The normal worker, they were regarded as stupid. They didn't need any education, because they were just there to produce the goods. I mean, we're simplifying this, of course. But this way of thinking still persists today in hierarchical organization. If you think about how they organized, the French economist wrote the book The Capital on the 21st Century. Mm-hmm. Fortunes are inherited from father to son. And the son hadn't done anything. Yeah. I mean, we as Norwegian, we know that in the fish industry, which is very lucrative. And some fathers started, and the sons are inheriting and haven't done anything. And now they're taking the fortunes and they don't want to pay tax for it. The masculine way of thinking.
It's very patriarchal, that way of thinking. And that's also what you see in the big farms. It used to be no women having the farms until the recent times. It was always the boy in the family, the oldest one, that took the farm role. When you think about the biggest wealthy billionaires today, like Elon Musk, they are also not the entrepreneurial spirits that started out by themselves, because I know their history that came from generations, and they were having some wealth given before they could start up something. Yeah. So it's like the same thing with the billionaires that kind of also got their wealth from the patriarchal family
Yes. I recently saw this great Netflix science fiction. It's the most intelligent science fiction movie I've ever seen.
Really? I need the title then.
The Three-Body Problem.
Three-Body Problem. That's the Netflix film we all got to see to learn about this, right?
Yes, and in it there's a joke. When I heard it was like I was thinking about Elon Musk, because when Einstein died, he went to heaven, and Einstein loved to play the violin. And so he came to heaven, and he asked the angel if it was okay if he could play the violin. And the angel said, no, he can't do that. And I said, why can't I do that? Because the god is playing saxophone. God started to play saxophone and he played beautifully. And then Einstein said, oh, that's beautiful, I want to play along. So he took down his violin and started to play along, and God got really furious. And he took Einstein's violin and crushed it into pieces and kicked him in the balls. Einstein was like, what is this happening? So he asked the angel, what did I do wrong? And the angel said, you don't play with God.
Oh yeah.
No, so I mean, this is typical for Elon Musk. He has a Messiah's complex. He wants to be God. You know what happens when you want to play God? You know, at the end, the downfall will be so big. With many of these guys, that's what they're doing. They have a narcissistic, are grandiose narcissist. And these guys are ruling the world.
They're very similar traits, and that you can see that they have these similarities. Usually the grandiose about themselves. You have Donald Trump in the West, Vladimir Putin in the East, and you have all these with big wealth that doesn't know what to do with all their money. Maybe they're being given it without having the competence how to distribute their money. So in order to grow, the only way is to grow the ego.
That's it. It's an existential crisis for these people.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You know, I read the story of Putin when he was a kid. I read the story about Donald Trump when he was a kid, written by his niece. And it's very clear. You know, they are in the age of 2 to 3 years old as maturity, because and then it's all about feeling safe and sound and secure and being loved. And the only way for they to do it is to do what they're doing. So I feel really sorry for them. I have a lot of compassion for them.
It's, of course, a way of thinking that kind of takes in all the signals that they're also getting all the time from people. And they usually have the same response, like, there's nothing with me. It's something wrong. They have to put the blame. And that's also very typical of this narcissistic that you're talking about. Yeah. Things are getting a bit out of hand, but I really want to see your point of view about this. Where are we heading? Where is this going right now?
Well, I mean, which we learned in systemic thinking, who knows what's good or bad? So obviously there's a lot of good about it. You know, when you think about serving humankind, making good decisions, the thing is that, in my view, it's not intelligent. It's not creative in the way that we humans are. It's not capable of feeling, having compassion, having empathy as we do. Mm-hmm. And the shocking thing is that it's been programmed 92% of young male engineers, which shows up, which is a threat to democracy, which is a threat to gender equality, it's a threat to equity, because a lot of tests have been taken and asking typical questions. And I did it myself. I asked some questions from my perspective, how I think about gender equality, and the answers you're getting back, they can't answer it because they have not been programmed to do it. Artificial intelligence in the wrong hands, you know what they will do. And I'm a big fan of Yuval Noah Harari and what he says about it, and Alman.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's also very critical, but he has a lot of great thoughts. I think that you are into something here, because compassion and empathy is very human. In order to know what you're doing, it has to be led by leaders that knows this about themselves. Because if they don't know it's a part of humans to develop, how can they then develop the products and the things we're going to use?
I recently read a book called Machine, Platform and Crowd, where they talked about how to use artificial intelligence to create better decisions, because that's where we can use it. And they refer to what they call a hippo, which has nothing to do with the hippopotamus, but is an acronym for highest paid person's opinion. And when I read the book, I was reading as, this can't be true. But what they're saying is that the highest paid person's opinion very seldom, if ever, bring any value to the company. So who's bringing value to the company? That is actually the one who has working, producing the services and producing the goods. But what they said, you can use artificial intelligence to come up with a foundation of possible alternatives to take a decision, and then you can discuss it in the team.
Oh.
For that to happen, everybody has to have the feeling that we are really our equal and that we have the same opportunities and the same rights, and everybody should be treated equal. This is not what's happening in today's business.